Okay, this is your hour, your chance to chat with Alexandra Robbins as we talk about the geeks shall inherit the earth. Maybe you might want to give us one of your little high school stories. Tell us what you went through. We'll also talk about Skull and Bones when we come back on Coast to Coast AM with you. I would think, Alexandra, that the geeks end up being more successful in life than those popular students were in high school.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. Yep, that's absolutely true. Being popular in school does not mean that you're going to be a successful adult. Being unpopular, I think, is actually a sign that you have something going for you that's going to help you out in adulthood. And I was talking about quirk theory before for people who are just tuning in. It is something I coined that says that the reasons that you're excluded in school, those same qualities are going to make you stand out and be successful as an adult. And I'm getting emails from listeners proving quirk theory. There's a guy who said he was quiet in high school. Hi, quiet guy. And he does a little shout out. He said that being quiet has helped him. There's a guy who said that he was bullied when he was 10 years old for having long hair. Well, just a few years later, that long hair helped him get the girls. So yeah, quirk theory, it works.
That doesn't matter. What would you recommend that some of the schools do in order to turn this around?
There are so many things that schools can do. There are a long list of suggestions in the book, but if I were to choose, let's say, just a couple things to mention on the air, one is vary cafeteria seating options so that groups of all sizes can fit in comfortably. Instead of just having those long tables with a certain number of seats, that makes kids sprint to the cafeteria to try to be the first of their group to get there. And
yeah,
if you're last and you can't fit in, then where are you going to sit? God, such pressure. More drastically, you could assign lunch seating once a month to try and get kids who normally wouldn't interact to know each other, because just that contact means that they'll get to know each other beyond the label, and they might form a connection, and they'd be less likely to harass a kid if they actually know the person. Something else is, and this is another very easy thing schools can do, don't punish students who are loners or students who have only a couple friends or students who don't have a date. So many schools give discounts for dances or plays or sports events or concerts to couples or to groups. And that rewards the students who can find a date, and it penalizes the students who would go alone. That is not cool, and that is such an easy thing to fix. Don't discount for groups. Let people who would go alone for the same price. Very easy fix.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Donald in Los Angeles, first-time caller, and he's on Coast to Coast. Hey, Donald, you're on with Alexandra Robbins.
Hi, Donald.
Hello. Hi, George and Alexander. Great show. Myself, I was the geek loner type in school and really didn't know how popular I was until 1982 when I went to my first reunion and I got all the reaction I did. I mean, I was totally oblivious to it. You know, Alexander, you mentioned about the one or two friend theory. I had my wife who got killed about 20 years ago.
Oh.
But no, it's okay. But in the last discussions I had with a couple of young ladies who were her friends, they said that she was her only friend. And I've really been trying to investigate that only friend thing. I mean, you have best friends, you have good friends, but they said she was their only friend. And I want to know if you have a comment about the only friend theory, you know, something like that.
Meaning that?
Out of everybody else, out of mothers and boyfriends and husbands, this person was the only person they could call and they could rely on at any time. I mean, the only one, not anybody else. It's just like when you go through a life and you only have one person, that's really dynamic to me. I mean, I was trying to get my mind around it, how that could occur, that you only have one friend that important.
Did they mean when they were in school or in adulthood as well?
In school and adulthood,
yeah,
throughout their entire, I guess their entire growing up, and that this, my wife, was their only friend. It was two separate women, never had talked to each other, and at the funeral, this is what, or in talking to them, this is what they told me, that she was their only friend. That was compelling to me.
I think that says a lot about your wife. personally, I think that means she must have been some kind of terrific person.
She was a very terrific person. But you guys have had a great show. Are you coming to Los Angeles for your book?
I don't have any dates planned yet. But,
plan a date, please. I would love to come out.
I will try my best. All I need is someone to bring me over there, and I'll be there.
Who do we need to talk to?
Schools or organizations. I give talks to students and parents.
I'm going to work on it from my end, and hopefully we can get you out here to Los Angeles because I think this is a great topic. And, George, again, you're doing a great job. I used to listen to Art all the time, and like I said, I'm a first-time caller. George, you are the best.
Thank you, Donald. I appreciate that. So I take my three grandchildren to the mall last week and bought them some clothes, a little present for them from Papa. And I'm at the mall with them, and I see these kids, Alexandra, they're wearing their underwear so high and their pants so low, I couldn't believe it. It was like it was falling off them.
Yeah.
I mean, the pants were halfway up the knee, where the knee is, just about halfway up, and the underwear was pulled up almost to their belly button. And I'm watching this, and I'm going, how could their parents let them walk around like this? Now, what is that? Is that would you say that's part of the quirk theory?
I would say it's a personal style, and you know I don't really have a problem with it as long as nothing's falling down, as long as there are no wardrobe malfunctions.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. It looked a little weird to me.
You know, I just want to say one quick thing. I didn't mean to dismiss the caller's question by refocusing it on his wife. I was just struck that, wow, his wife must have been fantastic. But the idea that some students have only one friend, if they're happy with it, like I said before, it's okay. It can be really hard to find someone you can 100% trust when you're in school. So if you have one person, you know what? At least you have that one person, and it's fantastic that you found somebody. I'm trying to think back. Did I have somebody in school I could trust 100%? I think maybe I had one. You know, I had friends, but in terms of one person who I could go to for anything, yeah, I can only think of one person. So I don't think that's outside the norm at all.
You know, I think most people have just a few friends, a lot of acquaintances, but one or two people that they can trust.
Agreed.
And probably that's about it, isn't it?
Agreed,
yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's this push toward trying to get as many friends as you can in school. Nah, it's not worth it because you can only trust one or two.
Well, let's go to Conroe, Texas. Kira's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Kira. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. How are y'all?
Good.
Hi, good.
Fine.
How are you?
Okay, I have three daughters, two still in school. One's a junior in high school, one is a seventh grader. One thing that you didn't discuss is my kids are kind of a montage of different groups.
Yes.
My kids, my 16-year-old, the junior, is a academic child. She's AP, dual credit. You know, she calls herself a nerd, but then she's involved in groups, organizations, athletics. The seventh grader, same thing. She calls herself a nerd, but yet she's involved in athletics. She also has had art, some drawings put up at the district. So is there a reason why you didn't talk to people or have in your book somebody who's like a montage of the different groups?
Oh, I absolutely did. I just didn't get a chance to talk about it so far tonight on Coast to Coast. So what you're talking about is called a floater, which is sort of what I was in high school, although I think I was kind of a dork too. A floater is somebody who can be, who can basically sit with many different groups in the cafeteria, but at least in my case, a floater sort of, you can sit at the edge of the table and talk to people, but you don't actually feel like you're a 100% member of any one group, and that can be kind of lonely in itself. But yeah, so if your daughters are floaters, that is wonderful, because floaters are people who adopt very early in school. God, seventh grade, and that's hard. Seventh grade is hard too.
It is. To
people in lots of different groups. They might be excluded from some groups because they don't have a specific clique that they belong to, but in adulthood, it helps them so much. And I have found this the case with my career and my personal life, too, because you can relate to a lot of different people and you can transmit information and cultural ideas between groups. Research shows that the number of floaters in school increases with age. Floaters basically have more of an adult style of social networking where they can be friends with a lot of different people and they can talk to people in a lot of different areas. And while that's not the case with popular students in school, and I'm talking about reputationally popular, the kind who sort of stick to themselves, that is one reason why floaters might feel like outsiders in school, but it is such an awesome quality to have.
Sure is. It really is. Let's go to Leipzig, Germany. This being an international program, Thomas is with us. Hi, Thomas. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hello, George, and hello, Alexandra.
Hello.
In the mid-70s, I worked in the City of London, and I was friendly with somebody who was very geeky called David, who worked in a bank. He was more interested in passing banking examinations in obscure subjects than in going out for a drink. But we were friends. And because of all his qualifications, the bank would send him out to affiliates and associated companies overseas. And quite often, because he looked so geeky, angular, small, thin, quite attractive, but rather rat-like, people like air stewardesses would stop him to ask to examine his credentials to see whether he was entitled to travel first class. But David was perfectly okay. And one day, when in a posh hotel in Hong Kong, after sorting out some local problem, with all of his pens in his jacket pocket, red, green, blue, black, and perhaps one or two pencils and metal comb, came across, or should I say, a famous actress came across him, Joan Sims, now dead, who was starring in the Carry On films. And at that time, I think she was down on her uppers and just taking whatever meager work was available. And after a few drinks, she made a play for David. And what happened was he became very nervous, rather agitated, didn't know what to do. And I swear all the pens in his jacket pocket started rattling.
An interesting metaphor.
All right. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks. I appreciate that. Way out in Germany. I'd like to meet this David guy, see what he's up to these days. Alex in Toronto, Canada, you're up with us. Hey, Alex, thanks for calling.
I like your name, Alex.
Thank you. I think what you're doing is tremendous work. This is the kind of thing I wish existed when I was in high school.
Me too.
I was ignored and kind of marginalized. And I think it's, you know, great for Coast and George and your team for having her on the air. I think also, you know, as much as I appreciate professionals like Anderson Cooper from CNN, you know, flying to England to cover a royal wedding, which, I mean, signifies, you know, glamour and money and looks, it's just so superficial. And it's something that I think these are adults, these anchor people, and I'm not picking on the media specifically, but I just find when anchors, adult professional anchors are spending hours and hours covering such a frivolous topic when they should be talking about this kind of stuff, which is really important.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Alex, because I purposely decided not to have any coverage of the royal wedding.
Thank you.
because you know what? This show gears itself to people. And you know what? I don't want to do a program with the elitists there and all that, as much pomp as it is. And, you know, good luck for them and their wedding. I don't think it's something that most of this audience would be interested in. And you're indicative of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I wish no harm on that couple. And
of course not.
You know, no, but yeah, and not to mention the plethora of other topics you guys cover, which are, you know, equally as important, you know. So thanks a lot for what you guys are doing.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I wish the couple well, but I really don't care about the wedding.
Yeah, don't care.
Not on my radar.
Wouldn't go if invited, but But they did not invite me, and I'm a little upset about it.
For shame.
Yeah. And you didn't get an invite either?
I didn't, but you know what? I might go if invited, just because, I mean, that'd be kind of cool. But, I'm not watching it. I mean, let's be honest. If you got an invitation, you would probably go, because your listeners would want to know your experience.
That's right. Let's go to San Jose, California, where San Jose is probably cheering because they defeated the L.A. Kings in one of the first rounds of hockey. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, the Sharks are doing pretty good. Hope they
yeah,
go
it's
away.
A tough team. Tough team.
We did it like last season. We had the Giants go all the way, and the Sharks, the South Bay, can get a little something, too. That'd be great. And I wanted to ask, whether it's the Bilderberger Group, the Illuminati, the Skull and Bones, I'm a member, I'm active in the Tea Party movement, and we don't want the regular old, rhinos, the run-of-the-mill Republicans. We really want to get back. What do you think we could do to vet out some of this special interest baloney, New World Order, and these groups? What can we look for? Is there any way we can vet out some of these new candidates that we're looking to bring up that aren't going to be part of these special interest groups that really try and get back to basics? Because we hear about all these groups, but we never really hear what can we do to combat that.
Well, Alexandra, some of these groups would be just like some of these groups in high school. They just turn out to be adults and they still do their thing.
Yeah, that's true. The groups like Skull and Bones are very, very cliquish. I mean, you're right that you could. I never thought about trying to connect the two books, but yeah, they can be cliquish. And I think to answer the caller's question, basically look at their background and see if they're in a society. If they're in a society, that means they might have ties to something whose interests they put above the interests of the country.
Brian in Denver, Colorado, take it away. Hey, Brian, go ahead.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, George. I love the program.
Thank you.
Great show. And I was just wanted to ask Alexandra. I just graduated last May, and I'm just kind of wondering where you see our education system going, because it just seems to me like a lot of people in school today just aren't motivated. We don't really care. We don't want to be at school, and it seems like if our education system was succeeding, then we would, be very motivated and enjoy going to school and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of students aren't motivated, and little wonder. Schools in this country are broken, I think. It's as if, especially with the push towards standardized testing, it's as if they think that there is only one best way for all students to learn. And we all know that is not the case. Students have different learning styles. They have different interests. And the way to get people motivated about school is certainly not to test them on specific subjects over and over again to the detriment and elimination of other subjects. Some schools have had to eliminate art and music classes and language arts and things like that. And also PE, but I guess that's a different show, too. The way to get people motivated is to let them study what interests them and to give them creative ways to go about learning it. And our schools are not doing that, which is why there is so much apathy among students and grads. I agree.
All right, we're going to come back with final phone calls with Alexandra Robbins as we talk about the Geek Shell and Here at the Earth on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with some incredible stories of high strangeness. When we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Alexandra Robbins. We've been talking about her book tonight, The Geeks Shall Inherit the Earth. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Alexandra, let me ask you a little bit about the bully in schools.
Yeah.
Generally, what happens to them after they get out of school? Do they keep bullying people and business and whatever, or do they shape up?
Well, there are sort of two prongs to that. Sometimes they continue their behavior, but the good thing is that in adulthood, it's not as accepted as it is in schools that there are going to be bullies. You'll find many people say, well, yeah, there have always been bullies in schools and there are always going to be, and they sort of dismiss it. And that's not a safe and healthy way to be. I don't condone that, but in adulthood, people are more likely to step up and stand up for themselves and not tolerate that kind of behavior. However, of course, you hear about workplace bullying all the time. So, it happens. I don't want to dismiss that out of hand.
Okay, let's go to the phones again. JP driving around in Connecticut. You're up with us. Hi, JP.
Hey, good evening, everybody, or good morning, I should say. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Alexander. I have a comment and a question. First comment was a couple callers back about the media. They're really focusing on the wrong issues, I believe, and I agreed with him 100%. And the other question I have for you, Alexander, is you probably lump him into it. I have a 15-year-old in high school, and he's a skateboarder. I was wondering how you felt about that, because that's a pretty tight-knit group, but I'm not really sure, did you see some of this in your other...
skaters, yeah. In fact, the gamer I followed was also a skater. He's very good at longboarding, and I think that was... It was interesting to follow him as a skater for so many reasons, but one thing about skaters is it's not just an athletic activity. Skating is an art. I mean, mm-hmm. If you watch these longboarders, it is like a dance. It is artistry. It is just this sort of flowing, languid movement. People think skaters and they think, burnouts and they do tricks on skateboards. It's so much more than that. There is a creativity and a form of expression there that people often underestimate.
It's big stuff. MTV's been doing shows on that. I mean, it's everywhere now, isn't it?
It's starting to get more mainstream. Not yet really in schools. They're sort of more outsider-like in schools. But I'm really impressed with skaters. I just think that it's beautiful what they can do sometimes.
But it's like a little niche all by itself, isn't it?
Absolutely.
All right. Next up, we go to Doris in San Diego, California. Hi, Doris. Thanks for calling.
Yes, and I enjoy the program so much. Have listened to it for years. My question is, I come from a very sizable family, lots of relatives, and we have quite a pattern of careers where we have a lot of teachers, police officers, nurses, other medical professions, and quite a sizable number of people who work for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Do you see sometimes do you think there's maybe something genetic that people are attracted to similar professions?
Oh, that's very interesting. I think if you're exposed to the benefits of a certain profession within your family, then you might be more inclined to it. Sure. I think, for example, there are a lot of families that have many, many teachers in the family, especially because you see the rewards. Teaching is such a real and rewarding career. I feel like if schools would just take all the money that they're funneling into this standardized testing and these nonsense programs and instead invested it in higher teacher salaries, improving the teacher quality in the school, and rewarding the teachers who are so great and who do so much, God, they should be paid a lot more than they are currently. I think our schools would be well on the way to being fixed.
Well, I think so, too. David's in Canada, and he's on Coast to Coast. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Oh, great. Hi.
Hey.
I just wanted to mention here, I have a couple kids in school, and here in Victoria, BC, and there's real strong anti-bullying kind of program in the grade from grade school right on through. And maybe that sort of contributed because there's also integrated classrooms. There's like every classroom has like a handicapped kid or a couple autistic kid. And it seems really effective, actually. The kids are kind of told from grade school, like, if you're bullied, talk about it, talk to an adult. It's not acceptable to be rude to the handicappers, that sort of thing. And it seems very effective.
Is it working better than it is in the U.S., do you think?
Well, I really don't have anything to compare it to, but I have my 14-year-old son is diagnosed with autism, and he has had very few problems.
That's excellent. Yeah, I think that U.S. schools could do a lot more for autistic kids, for kids with Asperger's. And, people tend to view the popular kids as somehow more successful in school than other kids, as if there's only one way to be properly social, only one way to have friends, and that's not the case. I feel like there's so many different ways of being social, whether you're autistic or whether you're just not popular or whether you don't care or whether you're a floater. And if we just realized and accepted that all these different ways of having relationships with people are equally successful, then I think we'd be better off.
So let's go to Scarsdale, New York. It's Chris's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Chris.
Oh, hey, George. How's it going? Hey, Alexandra, how's it going?
Hi.
I just wanted to ask you about, first of all, there's a lot of movies like Skulls and whatnot, and various movies touching on. I just want what your opinion on the accuracy of that is.
Oh, great question. That movie, The Skulls. Okay, so in that movie, they portrayed Bones as being sort of this murderous cult that when you become a member, you automatically get money in your checking account, you get a cool car, and you get the ladies. So, yeah, not true. I would say the most accurate scene in that movie is when the new members are brought to the island. And they're introduced to the more famous members of the society. That actually happens. Skull and Bones does own its own island, and it is a place where the more prominent members can meet up with the younger members, and connections can be forged and deals can be made. So that part of the movie was probably the most accurate piece in the film.
You know, what'd be interesting, too, is as you follow these students, I wonder if, did you happen to have a chance to talk to adults who were these types of kids earlier?
Yes, and they say that the same things that made them outsiders are the things that they are proud of as an adult. And again, your Coast to Coast listeners are emailing me now about things that they were bullied or harassed about or things that made them an outsider and that they are so proud of now.
Okay, let's go to Anita in New York. Hi, Anita. Thanks for holding.
Hey, great show, George and Alexandra. Have a recommendation and then a brief three-parter, and I'll listen over the air. First of all, get a hold of Chris Milligan's Fleshing Out Skull and Bones, Investigations into America's Most Powerful Secret Society. It's out of print, but find one. His dad was in the CIA, and it's excellent, excellent. Now, the first part of my question is, I'd like you to talk about how conscious the young people are. And by that, in other words, being that they're on the internet, are they into conspiracy, so-called conspiracy theory? So in other words, how do they look at the world and how do they think the world works? I'd like you to talk about the connection that you might have come across with the Masons. And the last part is if you could talk about the Russell Trust and the history of opium dealing that was sort of like the genesis of Skull and Bones. And I love you, Alexander. Love your ideas around the school. And hope maybe you'll think about putting that together in your next book. And thank you.
Well,
okay.
You
let's see. Brief three-parter, brief answers. Opium myth didn't actually happen. Masons. The Masons are very different from Skull and Bones. They are more community service oriented, as I understand, and they're definitely a much larger group. And the third question, some students are into investigating theories like that. It's not something that they, you know, kids are so busy today, not only with all the added homework, which is too much, I think, but the focus on the academics and the pressures in schools, but as we talked about before, the social pressures, both to sort of make sure they have a good image on Facebook and also to keep up. They feel like they have to keep up with everybody socially at school, so they really don't have that much free time.
No, not at all. Jason is in Farmington, Maine, and he's on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Jay. George, third time calling in. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Just had a question for Alexander. My wife and I, we have four children, ages 13 to 2, and we homeschool and just wanted to get her opinions, pros, cons on homeschooling. And I'll take my answer up there. Thanks a lot.
Okay, great. Homeschooling. Not bad if the right person is homeschooling.
Yeah, it really depends. sometimes you can get a much better education at home, and certainly a much more attentive one than you can at school. Now, on the flip side, you lose a bit of the socialization opportunities in terms mm-hmm. of getting to meet all sorts of different kinds of kids. So it really depends on the family.
A little three-year-old grandson, and I've noticed just a tremendous change in his attitude because he goes to a little daycare type school early, mm-hmm. and you know, he was very, very slow as he was a little baby in speaking and things like that. But now that he's doing these little classes with other kids his own age, he's talking more. He seems happier. I think, you know, people need to be around other people, don't they?
That's the big thing about homeschooling. There are so many benefits to homeschooling, but you got to make sure that the student is somehow also involved with other students his or her age.
Let's go to Tempe. Don, you're up. Tempe, Arizona. Hi, Don.
Hi, George. I've got a great story for you. One day as I went home to see my parents, I was out of high school, but I was familiar with the kids in the neighborhood. Well, there was this one kid right down on the corner. They just got back from playing basketball, and he was by himself. And I thought to myself, you know, he's really kind of strange, like me. He doesn't involve himself much with people. And I knew him because he was associating with a much older group, like myself, in and out. And I went down and I said, you know, I've noticed that you're just like me. I said, I've got a secret, and I know that you have a secret, and I want to know what that secret is. And he looked at me and says, do you really want to know? And I said, yeah. He says, you come to my house at 9 o'clock, 9:05 Saturday morning. So anyway, 9:05 Saturday morning, I went to the house, knocked on the door, and I walked in. In the middle of the room is a xylophone. And we walked through the house to his bedroom. And his bedroom was really kind of Spartan, just a bed. He had a drawing table, and he had these huge racks with bound books. And I looked at him and I said, Jim, what are these? He says, I draw cats. I said, you do? I said, how long have you been drawing cats? He says, well, I started drawing cats when I was 4. But he says, at 6, I settled on one cat. And he says, all these bound books here are cartoons, and they're ready to go to press. I said, Jim, that's a lot of cartoons. I said, how many years do you think you got there? He says, about 25 years. This kid's 13 years old. And I said, Jim, once you start publicizing, I said, you're going to become famous. He says, yeah, I know. He says, my mother's brother is a lawyer, and he's got it set up so that I have a story, so that nobody will ever interrupt my privacy. And he says, I'm going to have a boathouse in San Francisco, and la-da-da-da-da. But anyway, everything was to guard his privacy, and that's at the age of 13. The guy, he was Jim Davis.
I knew it. I knew that's where you were. I was hoping that's where you were going.
And the dog, O.D., is named after one of my very best friends, Terry, her dog.
That's great.
So I just wanted to share that. And I asked him that day, I said, Jim, have you ever gave away an autographed cartoon? And he says, no, nobody's ever asked me for an autograph. And I said, would you give me a cartoon and autograph it? And on it put the very first autographed picture of your cat.
That's cool.
And so I had that picture for years and years and years, and my mother resented that picture. And even when Jim first got his first 8 papers, and then it went to 15, and then it went to 78 newspapers that was carrying his cartoons.
Yeah.
Eventually, she got so aggravated at that cartoon on the wall, she ripped it down and threw it away.
No!
Yes.
Oh, Mom.
Well, anyway,
all right.
Yeah, this is a Thank you so much for sharing this story, because this is a perfect example of quark theory, which is what this book is all about. Here is somebody who was considered strange when he was a kid, and his secret was that he drew cats, and that made him strange. And you know what? He became beloved because he drew cats. So quark theory comes back again.
It does. Jess from Tennessee sends you a text, and it says, my son is in four clubs in high school. Can a student join too many? Is it harmful? What do you think?
Okay, well, it depends on the amount of involvement in the clubs. If he's dabbling in lots of different clubs and not pushing himself too hard in each one of them, yeah, some students can handle that. On the other hand, if students are trying to rack up so many clubs and extracurriculars just to put lines in their resume, but they feel pressured to spend equal amounts of commitment on each one of them, it can be a little much.
Yeah, it can be. Okay, maybe we'll get one more in. Douglas in Los Angeles. Got about a minute for you, Douglas. Go ahead.
Thanks, George. Bring back some of that water to the Angels, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, you know what? I don't really have can't really go into my high school, but I wanted to ask, go back to the Skull and Bone things. Was Bill Clinton a Skull and Bones?
No.
No, he wasn't. Oh, okay. He was, okay. I thought he was a member.
He was a Rhodes Scholar, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he wasn't an undergraduate at Yale, which is why he couldn't.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you, Douglas. Appreciate that. We're wrapping this thing up. The book, The Geek Shall Inherit the Earth, Alexandra Robbins' website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. She does have a few book signings coming up, those of you. And I guess you have that posted on your website as well?
I do,
signings?
Yeah. I'll be in Connecticut, New York, D.C. You can Facebook me to figure out where and when, if you like. I'm pretty accessible on email and Twitter and Facebook at facebook.com/thegeeksshallinherit.
Well, it's almost 5 o'clock in the morning where you are, so go get some sleep.
I'm going to have radio jet lag.
You got that right. Thanks, Alexandra. Nice job.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody.
Neat program. And you remember when you were a kid in school. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottisour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.